It's been so long. How do I start one of these things?
You say, I listened to The Lost Years by The Strike for X amount of time.
Yeah, you know what I might? I've been listening to The Lost Years by The Strike since episode 15.
And I listened to it once yesterday. Then you gotta say,
welcome to Spin It.
Yeah, like that.
Anyway, hello and welcome back for another episode of Spin It, the record ranking podcast. Today is another Connor takeover, which makes me the host, Connor.
That's right, and I'm James. I've been overtaken.
Still aiming for that top 100 album.
Yeah, the year of healing is well underway. Almost over.
It's coming to an end here soon, only couple months till the end.
Yeah.
We'll be in our whole new year.
I'm really excited for this one.
For this episode?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I thought I'd try to play the system a little this time. You know, I'm getting a little worried that I'm not going to meet my goal by the end of the year of healing. And so I thought I'd bring something I'd already kind of given you a taste of.
Yeah. A little tiny taste.
Like when you let the kid lick the spoon when you're making brownies?
Yeah.
You haven't had any actual brownies yet, but you got some of that batter.
No, they took 130 episodes to bake, but they're ready.
They're ready, ding ding. Fresh out of the oven, piping hot, don't burn your mouth.
I'll try not to. We first talked about The Strike a long time ago.
Yeah, all the way back on episode 15, our first ever singles episode. When, you know, for the singles episodes, for anybody who didn't go back and listen, James and I always bring one song ourselves that's like our pick for the singles episode. And so I brought the song Overtime by The Strike, which happens to be the first song on this album.
Yeah, and I will be honest, I really enjoyed it then. It surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
You compared it to Journey.
I sure did.
And talked about how the energy and the tempo and the synth and stuff, it did sound a lot like Journey. And that was exciting. It was new. And it has been on my playlist for the last 130 weeks. I've liked it. It's come up a few times, you know.
Yeah.
So I've kind of become very familiar with Overtime. And I was anxious to hear what the rest of the album is like. Because
I was anxious to hear what you felt about the rest of the album. Because I brought Overtime by The Strike. Because it was like the new song I just discovered. Probably less than a month prior to bringing it, right? It was like my new thing at the time.
Well, shoot, this album wasn't even out then.
Yeah. A lot of the singles things that like indie bands do a lot of time is release like 80% of the album in the form of singles as they're working on it.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they're trying to grow their popularity, get more streams, you know, stuff like that. It just seems to be the vibe in the indie scene.
Yeah, and it's helpful to do it that way.
So like most of the album was out at that time, even though the album itself wasn't out at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I got intimately familiar with a lot of these songs before the album came out.
So you kind of did the usual me thing where you listen to it a lot and a lot and a lot and get really used to it.
Oh yeah.
And other than Overtime, I came into this, I mean, really, truly listening to it for the first time for this episode.
Yeah, I mean, this album itself didn't officially come out till October of 2022.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is a really good strategy on your part, trying to crack into that top 100.
I hope so.
Top hundo.
Top hundo.
I really did and do like Overtime.
Yeah, and there's a lot to like about this album. I mean, The Strike in general has found this really interesting sound in the music space.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to it in my rundown notes a little later, but they sound like a 70s, 80s rock band, but in a world of new age music. Like, they've somehow blended both those sounds together.
Yeah.
But let's get into it. I think I begin by talking about the artists themselves.
Sure.
If 130 episodes serve me well in terms of memory.
I don't know what your memory remembers.
My memory, it's very hit or miss.
Yeah.
The Strike, they're a 5-member independent band based in Los Angeles, California.
That's the best Los Angeles.
It is. It's one of the only ones I know. The band is headed by frontman Chris Crabb and includes 4 other members. Yasuki Sato on guitar, Frank Ojeda on bass, Miles Lawrence on sax, and Jay Tibbetts on drums, which is my favorite last name out of all of them. I thought it would be Crab, but it's Tibbetts.
Really? Crab's a good last name, and Tibbetts is too. They're both really good.
It is, and has 2 B's. I like when I saw Chris Crab, I was like, that's going to be my favorite last name. There's no beating that. And I got down to Tibbetts. I think it's because it reminds me of the word tidbits.
Tidbits. Yeah. Just a little bit of tib.
No, I know what it is. Never mind. I know what it is. Ugh. It's because it reminds me of the word Timbits.
Yeah, like Tim Hortons.
Tim Hortons. I used to, back when I was in college, there was a Tim Hortons on campus that you could like spend your like college bucks at.
Mm-hmm.
And you got so many college bucks just as part of the meal plan, and I like never spent them on anything. So like every morning when I was walking by there, I would just pick up a box of Timbits because I had nothing else to spend that money on.
Every morning?
Not every morning, on Tuesdays and Thursdays, because I would then take them to work and put them in like the break room for people. So I was like the donut guy.
Got it.
On Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Awesome. I do like Timbits, and I do like Tibbits.
Timbits are good.
And I do like crab.
Yeah.
The two last names that we like the most are the two last names that are most reminiscent of food, so.
Yeah, would you eat a crab-flavored Timbit?
No.
Oh, okay. Just thought I'd ask.
Well, I guess it kind of maybe be like a hush puppy.
I don't know.
It could be done. Anyway.
Anyway. Where were we?
You do.
Here we are. So they first got together in 2013 at Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah. Then under the name We Are the Strike.
Yeah.
Different name. Mm-hmm. Different lineup, too. Very different sound, even. At the time, they had a very different sound than they do now. And, like, a huge different lineup with, like, a trombone player and a different drummer and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Chris Crabb and Miles Lawrence are actually the only two remaining founders of The Strike. While at Brigham Young University, they won the Battle of the Bands tournament against 2,000 rival BYU groups, which earned them their first ever gig in Utah's 4th of July celebration, backing Kelly Clarkson.
Whoa.
In the Stadium of Fire, which is a nearly annual event held at BYU's Lavelle Edwards Stadium around Independence Day. Imagine that being like your first gig is like backing Kelly Clarkson.
That's huge. It's got to be tough to open for Kelly Clarkson. It'd be pretty hard to break away after that.
While they were going by the name We Are the Strike, they released two EPs and one album titled Atom Bomb, which I actually didn't know until I did some research for this episode, because they've since removed all that music from Spotify.
It's true.
In an attempt to like focus and spotlight their new sound.
Yeah, I also found a little bit about Atom Bomb and the rebrand that they did. And yeah, I mean, it seems like they really picked a whole new direction and kind of went clean slate in a lot of regards.
Which is interesting. I kind of want to hear what their old sound was like.
Mm-hmm.
A little sad that they didn't like just leave it up under the old name or whatever.
Well, I mean, it would get confusing, maybe.
Yeah, I get it.
To have We Are the Strike and The Strike. And
yeah. But they rebranded as just The Strike and released their first album titled Faint of Heart in June of 2017. And it was met with national success, which is what led them to kind of relocating to Los Angeles, where it was most successful. In the summer of 2017, they were selected to play at the 27th annual Qingdao Beer Festival in China.
Yeah.
Which is like the second largest beer festival in the world, apparently.
It is. I was surprised that it was only 20-something years old.
I'd never heard of it.
Well, you're not in China.
But if it's the second largest in the world, I mean...
Have you heard of the largest in the world?
No.
Okay, well then I think your point is moot.
Fair enough. But yeah, they performed there for thousands of attendees over the course of a month. I guess it's like a month-long festival.
That's a long festival. They do it annually and it's a 12th of the year. Holy crap.
Apparently.
No wonder it's... And it's the second largest?
Apparently.
Wow.
Their music, actually, they've become so popular over in Asia that, like, their music's actually being released and, like, circulated there.
They're becoming international superstars.
Yeah. Speaking of international stardom, in early 2018, The Strike was hand-selected by Quincy Jones, whoever that is.
No, stop it.
To play a three...
The Quincy Jones.
Yeah, Quincy Jones. He's legendary. The Quincy Jones.
The legend that worked with Michael Jackson and everyone else.
Yep. And yeah, he's come up more times on this podcast than probably anybody else.
Yeah. You know what I'm thinking is, now that it's funny, we talked about him on the Michael Jackson episode, and that's the one where you forgot who he was as soon as I said his name.
Uh-huh.
But we also just mentioned him the episode before when we talked about this very residency with The Strike.
Wait, was Michael Jackson episode 16?
Yes.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Quincy Jones, you just went through a period of not knowing who he is. But we talked about this residency. That's huge.
Yeah, played a 3-month residency at Q's Bar and Lounge in Dubai. And it seems like that residency is meant for like up-and-coming artists.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't done too many of those, but I'm surprised nobody else we've done in the 130 episodes we've done since then have also done that. Still kind of exclusive to The Strike.
Yeah.
They played 60 shows at that residency over the course of 82 days, and each show was 3 hours long.
That's pretty hefty. That's a hefty schedule.
Yeah. The band is also known for their captivating live performances. And as I found one person describe them, their reminiscent sound of 70s and 80s rock bands in a day and age of music minimalism.
Ooh.
Chris Crabb's vocals have also even been compared to vocalists such as Steve Perry. So I feel vindicated in my initial comparisons of the band.
That they were like Journey? Yeah.
Yeah.
I can kind of hear it.
And the band is even open for Journey.
Oh, well, yeah, you can't beat that. It's like watching Journey Jr.
Yeah.
And then normal Journey.
They open for Journey, Carly Rae Jepsen, Lindsey Stirling, Macy Gray, and others.
I do love Lindsey Stirling. That'd be a fun one to get to sometime.
But that's all I really got about them. Other than the album we're talking about today, The Lost Years, was released October 14th of 2022.
So it was. But a lot of the songs, like you said, they predate that. That's pretty cool. That's exciting.
Yeah. And some of them predated by like years.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I don't know how to feel about it. Me and a friend who also likes to strike, we talk about it from time to time, how we don't know how we feel about the indie genre doing stuff like that. Because it feels like it lessens the impact of releasing an album when like 3/4 of the album you've already been listening to for 6 months to a year.
Yeah, I get that.
But at the same time, it's like great to have that music like as soon as they have it ready, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's a mixed bag, but it definitely does help with promotion and with stream numbers and, yeah, like you said, building a fan base.
Yeah.
It's exciting to get people hyped up about a single, and you can do it way more often than you can put out an album like this.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see both sides of that coin. But yeah, as a podcast and as a listener that primarily deals with albums, I kind of feel the same way.
As a singles listener, I love it.
Right. We represent.
In fact, they just, like, 2 days ago today, it's sometime this week, just released a new single I haven't listened to yet, and I'm sure you haven't.
No.
So maybe at the end of this episode, we can give it a live listen and see what they're up to.
Yeah, we haven't done a live listen in a while. That'd be neat.
Yeah. Well, that's all I've got. I don't know. Is there anything I'm forgetting to do before I get the dastard out here?
Oh, gosh. I don't think so. I think you've pretty much hit all the beats here.
Well, then it's time to bring out everybody's favorite game show host. Mixtaper, get on out here.
Hey, it's me, the Mixtaper. Coming off such a victory against you last time. I'm still riding the Alan Jackson high.
Ugh.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'm looking to redeem myself.
Yeah, I figured you might be.
My first ever loss.
It was your first ever loss, and it was a shutout. It was, I mean, in grand fashion, an implosion on your part.
It really was. I couldn't have done much worse.
No, but, I mean, you did have to eat pineapple and eggs. And it could have been worse because you could have eaten the pineapple and mayonnaise sandwich like you were supposed to. But that's, you know, bygones.
Well, you didn't tell me to make sure I had bread.
We're so letting bygones be bygones. I'm just excited to be back in here now. It's really the spark of joy has come back to my Factor Spin game against you.
Yeah, you know what? I don't feel too bad about the loss either, mainly because you were feeling pretty, you like hated playing against me.
It was scary.
Well, I'm glad that the spark is back in your Factor Spin playing.
For sure. And so I approached this week with new vigor.
Which is concerning.
Yeah, I did a thing.
You did a thing?
Yeah, and I feel like it's best to tell you about it now.
Okay.
So I knew you were picking the strike. I did a lot of digging and research, and I found, you know, a lot of good information out there about the strike, but I know it's kind of limited,
mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to up the ante, and I really wanted to dig a little bit. So I reached out to the strike via email.
What?
You may notice that you've no longer got access to the spin of email because I collaborated with James and had him kick you off the email.
Wait, what?
Yeah, and I just reached out.
What? Now, you see, Mixtaper, I know this is something you've done before.
Is it?
With no success. I know you've told me about some lesser known artists that we've done on the podcast that you reached out to when playing against James and got no response.
Hmm. Well, there's a first time for everything.
I'm scared if you've actually gotten responses.
Well, you took a really long time to pick what album you were doing. I was kind of close to when we were supposed to record this, and I had to collaborate and move the schedule around so that there would be enough time to receive a response, even.
Mm.
But it all worked out.
You received a response.
I've got some facts about the strike that I'm going to give you, and I just want you to know that you might not find them anywhere else.
We might have facts about the strike directly from the strike themselves? Wow, that's wild. Or you could just be making all this up.
I guess.
But we'll find out.
Well, the reason I really did this, and I guess we didn't even mention it, and this time it's totally on you, is that it's your birthday episode.
Oh, it is on
me. Oh, that's why you're...
Yeah, I knew there was something we were forgetting to talk about.
You forgot your own birthday episode. I feel like that can't... You can't blame James for last year if you forgot your own birthday episode. Oh, man.
Oh,
man. Man, this is great.
Yeah, it's my birthday episode.
Yeah, so that's the point I was about to make, is that I wanted to make it a special one for you.
I see.
And that's what I said in the email, was that my friend and roommate was having a birthday, and I really just wanted to, you know, make it a special one.
Wait, you didn't tell them you needed these facts in order to try it for, like, a game show? You didn't, like, explain the premise of what these facts were going to be used for?
I explained the premise. I explained the premise, and I just said I wanted to make it a special episode.
Did you ask them to give you funny spins?
I did say that they could send lies if they wanted.
Oh.
I explained the premise as quickly and briefly as I could and stuff, and it was very nice.
This is exciting.
I know. It is. And I wanted to tell you at the top.
I'm surprised you did this from the Spin It email, and not just from your own email that you usually have been doing it through to keep it away from James. I don't have access to that. But...
Email? Yes, I sure do. Well, like I said, I had him remove all your devices from the Spin It email.
You know, I do vaguely remember getting a notification asking me to re-sign in, and I just never did.
I didn't think you could. I mean, you know how your memory is with passwords.
Fair enough. This is insane.
Well, without further ado, shall we play?
I guess. Yeah, this is... I'm scared.
You should be. I wanted to strike fear into your heart. Pun intended. And my first fact is also punny. They were prepared for a different kind of strike.
Okay. Some sort of, like, music industry boycott?
No. A bomb strike.
A real bomb strike?
Yeah, they were prepared for a real bomb strike.
Like, they thought a bomb strike was coming, or...
No.
Oh, okay.
That'd be wild, though.
They just were prepared for one. Do they have, like, a doomsday bunker?
They were in a bomb shelter, yeah.
Oh. Why?
To film a music video for their song, Atom Bomb. The title track for the EP that you mentioned, that they pulled from everything.
Hmm. So this was for Atom Bomb?
Yes.
Like, it wasn't just, like, a set?
No, it's a real bomb shelter, but they kind of setified it.
Okay.
Yeah, they hung some string lights.
Where did they find a bomb shelter? How did they get access to a bomb shelter?
I don't know how they got access to it, but it's in Utah somewhere, according to them.
According to them, so this is one that they supplied you with.
This is a fact that I've taken directly from the strike.
I see. This is, I don't want to believe these are all true now, just instinctually, because I don't want to believe that the strike would lie to me.
Well, I don't know if they would or they wouldn't.
This is interesting. This is a gamble, if it is fake. Here's what I'm thinking. It has to be at least partially true.
How do you figure?
You know I got super into the strike, but you don't necessarily know how into them, so you wouldn't know if I've seen any of their music videos or not. And so to just blatantly lie about a music video for the song Atom Bomb containing a bomb shelter, like, at all, would be kind of a risk, right? So I haven't seen the music video, but I'm going to assume that it does depict them in a bomb shelter. What I have to decide is, were they actually in one, or were they on a set designed to look like a bomb shelter? That's what I'm currently trying to decide.
Well, again, they were kind of in a bomb shelter designed to look like a set.
Which is interesting.
It is, isn't it?
It's like, yeah, I have to decide, were they in a bomb shelter designed to look like a set, or in a set designed to look like a bomb shelter? Those are my two options here.
Yeah.
Anything else interesting about this?
Well, I mean, yeah. The way that they made it look like a set, they put up some string lights, they mounted 24 guitars on the walls, stacked up more than 20 amplifiers, put in a couple keyboards, at least 4. They put up a little marquee sign that said, "We are the strike."
I'm going to say this is true.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rationale?
Yeah, if they just took a set and made it look like a bomb shelter, that's kind of boring.
It is.
And it's my birthday episode, so I like to believe you want to bring a boring true fact.
Okay, so, well, I hope you find the rest of them interesting. I hope you find this one interesting.
Yeah, I find them being in a real bomb shelter interesting, so I'm relying on you bringing interesting stuff for my birthday. This is a true fact.
Okay, you've locked in true fact. Well, this is a very true fact. Happy birthday.
Yay! That's your first point. At least I can't go through two shutouts in a row.
No, you've broken the shutout streak.
That pressure is off.
Yeah. It's really cool. They dressed up in their Sunday best. Chris Crabb has a bear claw bolo tie on.
That's awesome.
And they shot the entire video in a single take.
Oh.
Tons of fun. You can find it on YouTube.
Now, I know their song Atom Bomb, for lack of a better term, blew up.
That's exactly.
Was, like, featured in a bunch of stuff.
I wrote that in my notes. Bravo.
Did you really?
Oh, totally. It was featured in a bunch of stuff.
So, again, I was like, it's popular enough. There would be a good chance I could have run across it if I deep dived into them like I did Miley Cyrus.
Hey, I like to live dangerously.
You do. So, but I figured you wouldn't be that dangerous.
No, I would, though. But it's okay. Atom Bomb has been on Dancing with the Stars, America's Got Talent, the YouTube channel of Devin Supertramp, and it has 4 million views on the treadmill dance video. I don't know what that is, but that is what they said.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Up next, one of your favorites, Jay Tibbetts, has a special object.
Oh, a special object. I thought when you first said one of your favorites, I thought you meant like a favorite fact of mine.
How would I do that?
You've done this before with having unique or weird objects.
Mm-hmm.
What special object does Mr. Timbits have?
Don't call him Mr. Timbits. Come on. He has a custom comb.
A custom comb? Like for combing your hair?
Mm-hmm.
Not honeycomb. Got it.
No, not a custom honeycomb.
Though a custom honeycomb comb would be pretty cool, now that I think about it.
That would be pretty cool. Unfortunately, this is not that.
Okay, what is this?
This is a wooden 7.5-inch barber comb with his initials burned into it and a handmade leather sleeve.
Burned into it, like using just like a wood engraver?
Yeah.
Sort of tool?
Yeah, like it's in there.
Yeah, and you said it had a what?
A handmade leather sleeve.
Oh, okay. Handmade leather sleeve, like to keep it in.
Yeah.
Like a sheath, if it was a sword.
Yeah, actually, I think it's called a sheath for a comb also.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, there we go.
I'm pretty sure that's the terminology.
Fair enough. That's not the terminology you use, so I wasn't sure.
Wow.
How did he get this?
It was a gift.
Oh, from a fan, a family member, a friend?
From his favorite barber.
From his favorite barber?
Yeah.
Who's his favorite barber?
His grandfather. His late grandfather, David Tibbetts.
Oh, Grandpa Timbits.
So it's also family. I just wanted to say it was his favorite barber and kind of like bury the lead a little bit.
Well, do you know it's his favorite barber? Like, is that part of the fact?
I guess I don't.
Okay.
But it'd be pretty rude to your grandfather to just make some random barber your favorite.
Maybe he wasn't good.
Okay, touche.
So he got this as like a, what, like a graduation gift? This is like a graduation-y gift.
It was a birthday present.
Birthday present. What?
Graduating from 1 year into the next.
What birthday?
Eight.
Eight? That's a sucky 8-year-old birthday present.
It is. I thought so too.
What? As an 8-year-old, I'm not going to appreciate a comb.
No.
Like, yeah, I'm sure like now he appreciates it and like right. It's a great gift, you know, yada, yada, yada. But like as an 8-year-old, you're looking at it going like, you're not my favorite barber anymore if you give me that as an 8-year-old. Let me tell you that.
No, I don't think it was the only thing he got that birthday, but I definitely was not probably the favorite thing.
Yeah, man. So like, I don't know what else to ask.
Then I don't know what else to tell.
Does he use it?
No.
Like, is it his go-to comb?
He's never used it, actually. It's more of a sentimental keepsake.
Never. Even as an 8-year-old, he didn't run it through his hair.
I don't know if that's even...
Probably because it sucked as a gift. He was probably like... Psh.
Threw it to the side.
Yeah.
I don't need this. I don't know. I don't know if he would even remember using it at 8 years old. But nowadays, at least, he doesn't use it. And he just keeps it in a special place.
The pantry.
That beats me. Maybe. I don't know. Didn't bother to ask about the special place he keeps his comb.
You probably wouldn't tell us for security reasons.
Yeah, right. I know.
What if somebody broke in and stole the special comb?
Every 8-year-old's dream, but not good now.
Every 8-year-old doesn't realize that's their dream. They look back on it when they're like older and go, man, I wish when I was 8 years old, I got a comb with my naming burned into it.
Yeah, or maybe like a sentimental keepsake from a departed loved one,
oh,
to put it more generally. Right. But
yeah, sure.
It's not the comb that's really the draw of it. He doesn't keep it because of what it is.
I see. My instinct, this is what's really done me in here, okay?
Okay.
I came into this episode ready to just say spin across the board because I knew you were going to have a hard time finding information about the strike because I had problems finding information about the strike just to do the rundown. So I was ready for you to just come in with a bunch of made up baloney. And now you've told me that you've maybe actually reached out to the strike.
Like, well, I've actually reached out to the strike.
Put it that you either actually reached out to them and got true information, which is a genius idea, or you knew you were going to have a hard time finding true information and have sent just told me that, which is is also a genius idea. Like, either way, it was a genius idea.
Yeah, it really was.
My gut instinct went from say spin to everything to say true for everything, and I don't know where that leaves me.
If it'll put your mind more at ease, I'll send you the screenshot of the email that I sent.
Yeah, I believe you reached out to them. Because I remember getting the re-sign-in notification for the... Like, I believe all that. I just don't know if they responded. And if they did, if they actually gave us anything. That's what... I don't know. But the fact that the other one was true maybe would imply that they did give us some stuff. I'll say true. I'll say, yeah, he's got a custom comb.
Custom comb. We locking it in?
Yeah.
Okay. J. Tibbetts custom comb from Grandpa David Tibbetts. I can tell you that David Tibbetts was indeed a barber. And that is some random David Tibbetts I found on LinkedIn and not affiliated with J. Tibbetts in any way. This is a spin.
Oh, that was a good spin. You had a good level of detail for that.
Thank you very much. I tried to keep it believably detailed, but not too much detail.
So that's just one you made up completely. That wasn't a spin provided by the strike.
Yeah, I told them I would work with as much or as little as they gave me.
Fair enough.
And this is one that I had to pump in myself. But an aside, J. Tibbetts is himself a composer, and he's written music on NBC's Sunday Night Football, in Sons of Anarchy, and in the Under the Dome series.
Hmm, that's cool.
I was going to make that the entire fact, but combs.
Fair enough. Man, sad I missed that.
I was going to say I'm sad you missed that too, but I'm not. You mentioned that it would be kind of silly of me to do a bunch of music video facts.
Uh-huh. Have you done another music video fact?
Maybe, just maybe.
Okay.
They drove an ambulance for snowmen.
For snowmen. In a music video?
Yes.
Which music video?
It's their music video for their song, Painkillers.
Hmm. Interesting. Because that one's on this album, so even more dangerous.
I can't speak for James, but I really did like the song Painkillers, by the way.
Yeah?
It's great, yeah.
That's curious, because I'm interested to know James's thoughts on that one, if he felt the metaphor was hit or missed. He can sometimes have very strong opinions on that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, you know how he is. I guess we'll wait and find out.
So they drove... Tell me the context of this. Why are they driving an ambulance for snowmen?
Yeah. Well, so the song is about using music as a painkiller,
yep.
Right? A way to escape from hard realities. That's the metaphor that you're talking about.
Yeah. And the hard reality is summer's coming and the snow is melting and they've got...
But the concept for the music video, they were like, what if we show up places in an ambulance and we play? You know, and we do like scripted storytelling mixed with like pop-up concerts around town and just really make a thing out of it, right? Us showing up in an ambulance to be like painkillers for people and stuff.
Okay.
It's a good concept. It lands. It lands really well.
Interesting. But I still don't understand why snowmen.
Oh, well, turns out you can't just rent an ambulance. Like, emergency vehicles are kind of tough to come by, and they're a younger band on a budget. But they happen to see an ad online for someone selling an old ice cream truck.
Okay.
Like one of the vans, you know? And so they said, okay, we can work with this. And they got a bunch of family and friends together and cleaned and painted the van to look like an ambulance. Had a big party.
And why snowmen? I'm still missing that disconnect.
So that's one of my famous clever titles, because they made it look like an ambulance, but it was an ice cream truck that looked like an ambulance.
So there was no actual...
No, there were no actual snowmen.
Okay. I was so confused. Like, what?
It was just a cold ambulance. See how this must be how James feels all the time. Yeah, this must be how he feels every time you say some ridiculous title. The snowman, there's no literal snowman. It's an ice cream truck they converted into an ambulance.
So you would just say an ice cream truck would be an ambulance for snowmen. That's what you're telling
me. Yeah.
That's the analogy you're making.
Right. Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
How do I feel about this? So the real fact that I've got to decide is, did they buy an ice cream truck and like fix it up and sell ice cream out of it and use it for this music video?
They didn't sell ice cream out of it, to be clear. They served ice cream out of it to the friends and family helping them overhaul it. And then they used it as an ambulance in the music video. Like one of those van looking ambulances, you know?
So what's the actual music video? They're driving around in it like it's an ambulance playing for people who need painkillers?
Yeah. That's it. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. You can see the finished product for yourself.
Can I? Will you show it to me?
Yeah, when we're done.
Oh, when we're done. Darn, I was hoping I was going to get you to show it to me there.
I'm not going to show it to you right now.
What? You said it like you thought. I don't know. I thought maybe you were going to show it to me. I guess I'm going to say this is a spin.
Okay. What for?
I think you tried to trip me up with the weird title so that I'd focus on that like I did. So that then when it was revealed that that part was like just part of the title, I would just say, oh yeah, I guess there's no reason not to believe this. This is true. But
To be fair, I did not think you'd get that hung up on the title. I kind of just assumed you would go with it being a random title.
You never explicitly said there were no snowmen. I kept waiting on the snowmen to show up. I was like, so why snowman? And you start telling me about how they made an ambulance. I was like, okay, but you still didn't tell me why snowman. I was just waiting on one of my first questions to get answered. You just kept not answering it.
I was waiting on you to ask.
I asked it like 3 times. Why snowman?
Because it's cold in an ice cream truck.
Fair enough. I'm just going to say spin.
Okay. Would it help if I told you that they tweeted out a photo of the party with the lyric, "Will be the soundtrack for the scene where reality plays the enemy because we're barely hanging on to the dreamsicle."
Does that help?
Yeah, that's how they announced the music video was coming out on Twitter.
I'm sticking to my answer.
Okay. Ooh, I tried really hard to change your mind.
Yeah.
But you're going to say that this one's not true.
It's a spin.
Okay. Going once. Going twice. It's your birthday.
I know. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm going with spin. I'm sticking to it. I'm not a flip-flopper.
Good thing, because this is a spin.
All right. That's what I thought, you dastard. Trying to be like, it's your birthday. You dastard.
I know. I just wanted to try and put the pressure on a little bit extra.
Any of this true?
There's not even a Painkillers music video.
Oh, my gosh.
So I knew you hadn't seen that one, to be fair. I knew you'd never stumbled across it. But it's fun, right? Ambulance for snowmen.
I think it should actually have snowmen.
I know. Well, I actually thought of the phrase ambulance for snowmen because an ambulance was driving by my window when I was taking notes. And then I just was like, I can't just say they drove an ambulance. How can I make it better? I said, aha, for snowmen. And then I said, wait, that's like an ice cream truck. And then I found the Painkillers song. And so it all kind of came together really well.
Fair enough.
I was proud of this one, but I'm sad it didn't fake you out.
I'm glad it didn't.
Also, you can rent an ambulance, and it's like $250 a day.
That's surprisingly cheap.
It's problematically cheap. Yeah.
We should rent an ambulance.
I don't think so, but if we had to, we could.
I don't know what we'll do with it, but we should definitely rent one.
Film a Painkillers music video, maybe.
Mixtaper, you would absolutely be the kind of person to rent an ambulance and then put like a Mixtaper banner across it and go heal people of their lack of pumpernickel bread. Who knows what you'd do with it?
Who knows?
Well, all right, I'm at least 50-50. Can I get the win on my birthday episode?
Oh, I don't know. I've truly saved the worst for last.
Okay.
Miles Lawrence has bold and imperfect game.
This is the worst. This is absolutely the worst.
It's absolutely the worst.
I hate this. I absolutely hate this.
I warned you.
Okay, so a perfect game is like when you bowl all strikes. So, every game that isn't all perfect strikes would be imperfect by definition.
Well, that's true.
So, are you just telling me that Miles Lawrence has bold?
That he's bold? No, I'm not telling you that he's bold. I mean, I like the title imperfect game, but let me be straightforward up front. I'm not just saying he's bold.
Okay.
No snowmen are involved.
Okay.
I'm saying for a long time, he had never bowled a strike.
For a long time, he had never, but he has now?
He has now.
Okay.
But for a long time, he had not.
Even with, like, bumpers, he never got a strike?
He says no.
When was this? Like, as a kid?
Yes, up through 2017. He tweeted a photo of a bowling frame with the X in it and simply said, finally, when he did get his first strike. But it took a long, long time.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, how did he notice this like, struggle with bowling?
Well, I can't help but notice. You're not asking questions that would lead you to it, so I don't think you understand the band's name origins. Is that right?
No. Are you saying this is how they got the name The Strike because he couldn't bowl?
This is how, yeah, everything got started. They were hanging out together, bowling one night, just as bandmates, you know, to do something. On a night out in Provo, Utah, they decided to go bowling. And, I mean, Miles was noticeably bad.
Ooh.
Yeah, he said his best frame was like 6 pins. They did not let him put the bumpers up. It was a struggle. And at one point, during the night, he ended a frame with four pins. Chris Crabb was up right after him, knocked down six with his first ball. And Lawrence made a joke along the lines of, oh, if you add our scores together, we're the strike. And Chris said, wait a minute, that's pretty good.
And that's how they got the name We Are the Strike?
And that's how they ended with We Are the Strike. Obviously, they shortened it down to just The Strike.
Sure, sure. Talked about that.
That's where it all began.
Really? Interesting. This one's perplexing me.
Okay.
I feel like if this was common knowledge, it would have been in the stuff I had that I like looked up to get information. But you said you emailed them, so maybe they supplied you with this. But also, just making a bowling fact out of the name The Strike is such a you move, Mixtaper.
Well, that may be true.
Especially a, like, you playing against me move.
That also may be true. And don't think I didn't consider how that would make everything play out. But in the situation where this is a fact, obviously that works to my advantage.
Mm-hmm. But also, I don't know if you could have resisted it, even if it wasn't. And you were smart by attributing this to one of the two remaining founders. Oh, man. How do I feel about this? You got anything else? Like, tell me, you said, when did he finally, you said he tweeted about finally?
Yeah, in 2017, he put up a picture of his X'd out bowling frame.
So they like to bowl. They bowl a lot as a band?
Frankly, I couldn't tell you. This might be, 2017 might be the next time he went bowling since they named the band. I don't know.
But they would have had to be bowling a lot together at some point in order to notice this habit, right?
I don't know. I mean, really, it could have been the first time he bowled when they got together and went out as a band. I mean, the odds of that are pretty slim.
Mm.
But I don't know. What I know is he did not bowl a strike. They named the band after it, and then he bowled a strike. The end. Question mark?
I don't.
This is the longest you've ever had to think about something I've said.
I know. I'm going to say this is a spin. I can't let you convince me this is real. I can't fall for this on an episode about The Strike. I fall for a blatant lie about bowling.
It's not a blatant lie. It's the way they got their name.
Unless they supplied you with this, because I can't imagine that wouldn't have been common knowledge that would have shown up on like their facts page.
How many facts pages include band name origins? No, this is out there.
Well, like Wikipedia pages and stuff usually
this
do.
This information
no.
is...
No. Now you're trying to gaslight me. Now you're trying to gaslight me. This is a spin. Lock it in. Ching, ching. I don't know why I did the Law and Order thing there.
I don't know either. Wow, okay.
If it's true, that's awesome. Fun little tidbit. If not, at least my pride is intact, you know?
Okay, fair enough. Well, happy birthday to you. This is a spin.
I knew it, you dastard. I knew you wouldn't be able to resist.
I couldn't resist. I couldn't.
I knew it. Oh,
The Strike never emailed me back.
They never emailed you back. You see, that's what you've always told me has happened when you've done other bands, is they never have gotten back to you.
No, but I was so prepared, and I even photoshopped a fake reply.
What?
I did.
You photoshopped? Why? Why would you do that? In what world would you need that?
Just if you wanted proof that they emailed me back. I was prepared, but I wasn't going to offer it up unless you asked.
Well, I wouldn't have asked. I felt like that wouldn't have been in the spirit of the game. Half the spirit of the game was me not knowing if you were telling the truth or not.
Well, that's true. But I just wanted to cover all my bases.
That's nuts.
Anyway, this is totally made up. That's not a bowling thing. Chris Crabb said, we arrived at The Strike after literally days of thinking of names and just really liked it. We liked that it could be taken so many different ways, and we felt it embodied our sound as well. Kind of high energy and exciting.
Yeah, so nothing. Well, we picked it because we liked it, so.
That's right.
I was like, if it was something as uniquely interesting as like, oh, one of our band members has never bowled a strike, like that I felt like would have shown up places.
Yeah, it might have. Would have been fun, though.
Ridiculous. That's hilarious that I didn't even think. I was just like, maybe Google updated its privacy thing, and so therefore was forcing everybody to sign back in. You know, like they've done that before. We have to re-sign into your devices when you accept the... Mm-hmm. So I just assumed it was something like that. And I was like, I'm not in there often enough. I'll sign into it someday. Just thought nothing else of it. I had no idea you kicked me out.
Well, you know, a dastard's got to do what a dastard's
got to
do.
I have a bone to pick with James because you told me you got him to do it.
I just needed him to get you off the email, and I needed him to move the date of the episode so that I wasn't emailing them 48 hours before we recorded this.
Yeah, that's why James was so okay with moving the recording. Okay.
Totally.
I thought that was weird. All right. 3-1.
Well, it's no Alan Jackson, but...
I'll take it.
I had fun getting ready for this week, and I really liked playing head games.
Yeah.
With the email thing, so... I tried to make it special for the birthday.
You dastard.
I can't believe you forgot your own birthday.
I know. I forgot. I said I forgot. I just maybe hadn't brought it up yet. Maybe I was saving it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know. Get out of my head.
Okay.
But yeah, this was good, mixtaper. Time to get out of here. Get James back in here.
Yep. I'll be back. And I'm still don't think this has done anything to dampen the spark. Okay? I'm ready for next time.
All right. Good to hear it.
Yeah.
Welcome back, James.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I'm mad at you for two reasons.
What?
Reason number one, you were in cahoots with the mixtaper this week. We're supposed to be on the same side.
Well, I know. I wasn't helping him trick you. I was just helping him...
Trick me.
You know, just facilitating the game.
Oh, okay. I see.
I was still rooting for you to be better than his tricks, and you were.
The other reason I'm mad at you is you forgot my birthday again. You haven't told me happy birthday yet. This is my birthday episode. How dare you forget my birthday?
Well,
you're a monster. 2 years in a row, you've forgotten my birthday.
Don't turn this back on me. We forgot your birthday.
I knew it was my birthday episode. This was a test to see if you were going to go the whole episode and not mention that it was my birthday episode. And the mixtaper saved you.
No, it wasn't. No, don't say that.
The mixtaper saved
you
because, you know, you two were in cahoots.
That's not true.
You almost failed the test.
That's not true.
Imagine if you'd made it all the way to the end of the episode without acknowledging my birthday.
That would have been really funny, but kind of awful. You're right. It would have been.
So I guess it's time to talk about the album art.
Yes, it is. We're on a real black hole kick lately.
Yeah. The Lost Years features a dude in outer space running up some sort of steps as he's the steps and part of his suit is being sucked into a black hole.
Black hole sun. Not to throw it back to Soundgarden the other week, but yeah. And he's very smartly dressed, just like the band always is, by the way. It's kind of their signature look.
And like a 70s, 80s themed suit, like a nice baby blue suit with a yellow dress shirt.
Yeah, the mixtaper wasn't lying about that bear claw bow tie that Chris Crabb wore in the music video. It's a good one.
What do you think about it?
I really like the way that this is framed. I really like that, you know, we're kind of bound by that white border around it, but the black hole, the path that he's running on.
And the stairs, yeah.
So many different elements of this picture, like, protrude outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it kind of really dynamic.
Which is interesting, because then, like, the rest of it is behind the box, right? Like, if you look at the, like, galaxy in the bottom right, the little bit of the right side of it is actually behind the white box, right? So it's like, all of that is in the background,
yeah,
really
far,
far away,
away.
But the black hole and the stairs are, like, foreground, up close. Like, we are close to that black hole.
It's imminent. It's urgent.
I like it.
I like it a lot, too. And it will be referenced later.
The album art
will return. Yeah, it will.
Well, let's jump into a track that's not new to the podcast. Overtime.
Yeah, we're listening overtime to it. Sounds familiar.
Sure does. As soon as you hit play, bum 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 bum, like, it's just instantly, you're like, yeah.
Oh yeah, I still really do love the journey-ish synths and the big sound that they establish right off the bat.
Let's go.
I still really love driving my rundown car like a limousine straight through the night. It's a lyric I shouted out in episode 15, and I'll do it again because it's still really good.
Heck yeah.
And Sinner feeling like a winner.
Yep.
I really like it. It's a song about working overtime, putting in the hours.
This song just sounds like it should be playing on a jukebox in a small town 80s diner.
It's maybe a little too upbeat for that, but
I guess maybe in like an 80s diner or of a TV show set in the 80s. Like, this would be like the opening to a movie or a TV show episode, picking up in an 80s diner with a jukebox playing. And like, this is the song is like, oh, produced by so-and-so, you know, starring. It's like, dun, 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 dun.
That's true.
I'm a big fan of Overtime.
I like Overtime a lot. I'm surprised it's only got 2 million plays, whereas other songs later on the album are almost to 9 million at this point.
Yeah. There's some very popular songs on here.
I think Overtime's a great opening track. I honestly, the first time we passed through this song, I didn't realize how much the chords almost never change until we get to the bridge.
I was curious how you'd feel about that.
Well, to be honest, on the first listen, it really was not bothersome at all because everything was going so hard. On the second, third, I don't know what listen this is for me, probably dozenth. I've listened over time, I mean, quite a few times since 130 weeks ago. But, you know, it starts to wear you down a little bit, but it's really not so bad. The saxophone solo.
The saxophone, yeah.
Is still genius.
Shout out to Miles Lawrence there for that sax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's the first glimpse we get of kind of the main element that makes the strike unique, and that's the brass mm-hmm. and the horns and the way that they use like physical brass instruments to augment their sound.
This like full band sound. I love it.
I also always laugh at his little yelp.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometime after about 3 minutes.
Oh, I know. I think I know which one you're talking about. Hang on. Yeah. There it is. Found it in 3:15. He goes, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That one always makes me laugh a little bit, but it's fine. I hold the same opinion of it as last time. Totally fun, high energy start. It sets a bar that I was really curious to see if the album could live up to.
Well, when you hear the beginning or track two, the first one you hadn't heard, Nothing New. Was it Nothing New?
It was new.
Was it Nothing New in the sense that like it maintained that bar? Were you like, okay, this is matching that energy of Overtime, or were you disappointed?
Well, the energy definitely matched. The saxophone right off the bat, great choice. Another really driving beat.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the intro was such a groove.
Which is funny because the first word is Southbound Drive.
True.
Southbound Drive on a desert night at 95 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't sure if I loved backing off to just the bass for the first chunk of the verse. I don't know. Maybe that's a little nitpicky.
I feel like you have to, though, but because they start so strong. If you don't back down, where do you go when you get to the chorus?
It needed to be scaled back. I would have maybe done something other than just the bass like they did it. I don't know.
Oh, okay. I feel like they scaled it back in order to try to put you in that mindset of it's late at night, you're all alone, driving down a desert road. Very empty.
Oh, yeah, very much. The desert imagery is quite strong. I was whelmed by the chorus of Nothing New.
Yeah?
On the first time.
Just whelmed?
Yeah, just whelmed. I was. I wanted to be overwhelmed.
It's very smooth, and it's not necessarily as high energy as the chorus to Overtime. They keep it smooth.
No.
Very silky, polished.
That's true. Lyrically, also whelming. I knew you broke the rules. I see it in the way you move. This is nothing new. It was okay. The Oh My My's were all right. I felt like the best parts of the song were everything but the chorus and the melody, which was kind of unusual. Like the instrumentals, excellent. I really even kind of like the verses a lot. The saxophone's awesome. The chorus just kind of lost me a little bit, with the exception of the breakdown at 3 minutes.
Yeah, yep.
The breakdown at the beginning was maybe missing a little something. The breakdown at 3 minutes, I thought was spot on. Loved it. And I think it seemed like they kind of leaned into the instrumentals a little extra at the end by relying on that instrumental backing and a guitar solo for like half a minute at the end of the song. So I really like that. Like, everything is there, I think. It's just missing something. And I can't pin down what it is that I want out of Nothing New.
That's interesting, because this is like the most popular song on the album. Almost. It's the second most.
Yeah, and I see why. I certainly enjoy it. And it's going to make the regular rotation on my playlists.
Awesome.
It's fun.
I think it'll grow on you as you go. When especially like listen to it on like the stereo of a car as you're driving. This song hits really well.
Oh, yeah. I think it will. I think that's kind of a thing that a lot of the album's going to struggle with, is that a lot of the tracks are growers in varying degrees.
You're also just not as used to only one listen. You know, this is what I go through every week.
That's true, too. I usually give them a chance to grow before they score.
Yeah. So, again, you've yet to do it, but I keep waiting on you to, like, have one actually grow on you where the score goes up a little bit once it's grown on you.
Yeah. Well, I will say, my opinion on kind of all parts of the album shifted towards the end. I don't know, we'll get there. But until we get there, we got miles ahead. I started this song and I said, okay, the piano's promising. The drums are promising. Thought that first verse was promising. Thought that bass was promising.
Uh-oh.
Thought that pre-chorus was promising.
Go ahead, crush me.
That was where my notes stopped. I'm not crushing. I don't know.
Well, you said you thought the pre-chorus was promising. Was the chorus promising? Did the chorus pay off?
Well, I feel like I can't say the chorus is promising because that's like the chorus.
Did the chorus do what you wanted it to do? You kept saying promising, promising, promising. Did you ever get what was promised?
Well, so I wish the chorus was a little more mobile. It kind of hangs heavy on a really uninteresting note in the chord when we get to the chorus. But the contrast between the fast-paced pre-chorus and the slow vocal on the chorus, I thought was really great. So, like, the chorus,
I like the chorus of this one.
There were definitely some unique elements that I liked about the chorus on Miles Ahead.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I don't think the note is uninteresting. I think it's interesting because, like, this has, obviously, we've said it a million times at this point, like, strong Journey sound to it. But I also think it has that element of Barry Manilow easy listening that I really liked and you struggled a little bit with. Mm. Because I think that note is very easy to sing along to, and it's very, the constantness of it is very easy listening vibes.
A nice third.
The fact that it doesn't do a lot of moving or hit a more interesting note, in your opinion, I think lends to its easy listening vibes, which is, I think, something that this whole album as a whole, you've got your super upbeat, high energy ones like Overtime, but a good chunk of this album is meant to be, I think, very easy listening centered.
It certainly is easy to listen to, mostly.
It's meant to have kind of that Barry Manilow effect. The Hoons would hate it.
Yeah, maybe. No, I don't think they would. But I can see kind of the point you're making, the comparison you're drawing. I think if you're going to compare this band to things, I think you need to compare this band to Walk the Moon.
Mm.
Big time.
Interesting.
Once I started thinking about that, it couldn't separate in my head. And I was like, oh, yeah. I don't know. And I feel like for Miles Ahead, based on past comments, I kind of feel like I'm obliged to be critical of the left field mixed metaphor. Like, we're talking about being miles ahead, right? Driving your car so fast, I'm running to keep up with you. Like, you're so it, and I'm so playing catch up.
But you're miles ahead.
The mixed metaphor, perhaps you're staging a scene. Your script is so obscene. I play, I forget, and you say the things you said. I feel like I have to be a little bit critical about that.
What? No.
It's not my favorite line.
I feel like it's because you gotta take it into account with the line before it, right? I mean, if you, on its own, it maybe doesn't seem like it fits, but the line before it, I'm a teenage kid running things back in my head. It's like, he's talking about how he's like remembering interactions with her, and he's going, oh, maybe you were staging a scene. You know, like this memory was staged.
Okay. Like maybe you were
playing me the whole time. Like this was always an act or whatever. Like you were already miles ahead. Exactly.
Like Taylor Swift Mastermind level.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's how I interpret it.
I just didn't like you say the things you said. That was like, okay, what else was she going to say? The things that she didn't say?
Yeah, you've always been critical of lines like that, and maybe I have too on songs I didn't like. But
it's not that I don't like Miles Ahead. I did. I just noticed that.
Sure. Yeah, that's one blemish of a line.
Thought it was all right. I really do. The verse, the pre-chorus, the intro, the instrumental, top-notch. I think there's a lot to like about Miles Ahead. And I like that the chorus is different and that it's still high energy, even though it's like slower paced in terms of just the cadence of the lyrics.
Hmm. Up next, the most popular song from the album, and came out almost like, this was one that probably came out like right before the album dropped, like a few months before. This was like almost a year after Overtime.
Yeah, this was one of its singles, right?
Devils in the Canyon.
Yeah, and I knew this one was a big one.
I remember when this one dropped, because me and the guy that introduced me to the Strike were like, oh, a new Strike song's out, let's listen to it. And it was like the go-to song when we were in the car together for a while.
Oh, you were riding like Devils in the Canyon?
Yeah. And the way that saxophone starts at the beginning,
it's pretty strong. The plucky guitar on Devils in the Canyon is really nice. I knew it was a big one from some of the research I had done, and just, yeah, play count alone. I saw a lot about it, and I understand why.
I like that drum beat driving you along, a little more prominent than some other songs.
Right. They really just hit the gas pedal, and they let it ride.
Yep.
I don't think the album has slowed down one iota from Overtime to this point.
All gas, no brakes.
Yeah, really. And I kind of thought the saxophone was a little aggressive between phrases in the chorus.
Really?
I did.
I love it. I love that it's so aggressive.
It's one of the only parts of saxophone bit that I'm kind of critical about on the album, I think.
I think the all gas, no brakes mindset really is driven home by that saxophone that just comes wailing in between phrases.
I'd rather have more vocal melody in this chorus.
Nah. I think the drum beat lends itself to more broken up phrases. Like, how would you want it to go, I guess? I'm trying to even envision it being something else.
I don't know. And actually, I don't know. To kind of think about it, in my head, it kind of feels like the way that the lyrics are so spread out, they span a canyon. There's one edge, and then there's a gap, and then there's the other edge on the other side of these phrases.
Kinda, sure. I like that.
And I don't know if that's a metaphor that I would draw if it wasn't the name of the song, but it definitely feels like he's kind of yelling from one side of the canyon to the other, and the saxophone is kind of what spans that gap.
Yeah.
But I think by the last chorus, I really was on with the saxophone. Like, you really needed something there if you weren't going to put a melody in. It can't be anything else but the saxophone.
Oh, yeah. I love the saxophone there.
It's definitely a feel-good, good time album. And I think lyrically, it does a good job keeping up with the music.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you going to say in a song that sounds like this? What are you going to say in a song that sounds like Miles Ahead? I think they do what they can with what they've got, and I think they make great music to back it up. They definitely feel a lot like a music-first band.
I think the lyrics hold up.
They do. That's what I'm saying. They keep up with the music.
Yeah, but the music is like the focus. Sure.
Yeah. They don't push the music places.
The lyrics are supporting the music. The music isn't supporting the lyrics. Yeah.
That's it.
I'd agree with that. And I like that. As an instrumental guy, I like that. Maybe you're figuring out why I like it so much.
Oh, yeah. It does all make sense. It's all adding up. Either way, I take them as they are. So all gas, no brakes, huh? How's that hold up on Take Me As I Am?
Well, that was for that song was all gas, no brakes. Not the whole album.
This song is all brakes, no gas.
So this was one of the first songs that was released with the album drop. Like it was, this wasn't released ahead of time. So I had not heard it until I went and listened to the whole album.
Ooh, not a single. What'd you think?
I think this one fits with the album art really well. This feels like a song that could be playing over the scene of the guy running up the stairs away from the black hole.
It seems too slow for that. He's getting vaporized.
Yeah, and I think it's like the kind of song that's playing is he's like running and maybe the scene's a little slowed down as he's like running and like maybe there's somebody standing at the top of the steps, arms outreached.
Okay.
And it's just that bum, 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 bum. You know, that line just feels... And some of the other instrumentals feel very ethereal. They kind of have a very spacey vibe to them. Like, they're happening in a vast openness of, like, space.
Oh, yeah. Definitely kind of wide open and stuff. I like the slow song. It's a good change of pace.
I think it needs it, right?
Oh, it does. Absolutely. I do think I've kind of heard half a dozen songs roughly just like this.
Really?
Not a very bad thing. No, but this is a song, this is actually the song where I was like, this is very like Walk the Moon. It's very Tiger Teeth kind of reskinned. But I mean, I don't dislike it for that.
I like the subtlety of the sax on this one.
Mm-hmm.
How it's just in the background is providing little chords. It's not really doing a lot of movement. It's just there.
Yeah, I saw a video of one of the members of the band breaking down how they recorded and produced one of their albums.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like taking you into their recording software and soloing out track by track what was what. And it was really cool just to see how it was, you know, how they recorded things in their process.
That does sound cool.
I'll have to send it to you.
Fair enough.
I think in a vacuum, Take Me As I Am is a great addition to this album. If you're looking solely within the bounds of this album, obviously it's necessary.
What other bounds would you be looking?
It sounds like the rest of the album while being totally different in its own kind of way. Really vulnerable kind of love song, right? Comparatively, I don't know if it really brings too many new or unique things to the table in this type of song.
Sure.
That's the other bounds where I'm looking.
Well, I don't think you need to look at that.
No, it's outside the scope of the record. I'm just saying it sounds like a song that I had already heard the first time I listened to it.
This album's just looking for your love, all right?
It sure is.
Specifically a love of a top 100.
Yeah, looking for love. I like looking for love sequenced right after Take Me As I Am.
Yeah.
You know, you got to bring us back up slowly now.
Build it.
Bring us back up gently. Looking for love is a great step on the way. I thought the verse was solid. The pre-chorus was excellent. I also thought there was a sneaky little reference to overtime in there with the lyric, you'll never get it if you're only working 9 to 5.
Yeah.
I thought the chorus needed a tag when they say looking for love. I wanted a second looking for love or something, some echo.
Well, there is.
Some other thing. But I really did like the chorus a lot.
Well,
at the end.
Yeah, they go, but you're looking for a love. Yeah, you're looking for a love.
No, but there's such a space in between. It needs to be more immediate.
Oh, you want it to be like, but you're looking for a love. Looking for a love.
It's the canyon thing again.
Yeah, you're looking for a love. Looking for a love.
Yeah, something more like that.
You're a call and response. Gotcha.
That's what I expected it to do.
Okay, I can see that. That would be nice.
I do think Looking for Love has one of the best choruses we've had in a few songs, actually.
Oh, okay.
At least I did when I first listened to it at the time.
Like since Devil's in the Canyon or since Miles Ahead?
Maybe. I didn't really quantify it.
Okay, because it's only been a couple songs since Devil's in the Canyon.
That's true. I don't know. I did like the cutback to just drums and claps. That was great in an album that's been so awash with instrumentals and synthscapes. It was really great to just kind of have that way scaled back analog-ish sound back.
Sure.
But in general, I really like the beat of Looking for Love. It's the kind of chorus that can get stuck in your head right away. And it stuck with me. You know, in between when I listened to the album and coming back to it now, this is one that I remembered very well.
Okay. Now, on to one that the mixtaper really loved. I'm curious to see if James agrees. Painkillers.
Oh, yeah. Painkillers, the song without a music video. Hey, The Strike, if you're listening to this episode and looking for an idea for a music video, boy, do I have an idea for you.
Yeah, you can have that one.
For a price.
Oh, we're not giving them that one for free like we usually do?
No, they can have it for free. Sure.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Like, we just want somebody to take one of our ideas for once. Like,
that'd be cool. Oh, that'd be cool. Painkillers reminded me a little bit of, like, conceptually, Brooks and Dunn's Neon Moon.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It felt like we're sitting in a bar, everyone's got a problem.
Brooks and Dunn's Neon Moon needs some painkillers.
It's a sad, sad song. I know. And he's watching people drinking away, jealousy and hide and wondering eyes and dad spending money. And this, all this stuff is happening that's negative. And so they're the ones there playing painkillers, trying to lighten the mood, trying to give people this way to escape. I really did like the metaphor here. One of their stronger ones.
It's such a relatable concept that I don't think I've ever heard a song about, like, in this form.
Really?
There's been songs that are like, oh, I'm playing the blues or whatever, right? Because I'm sad, right?
Yeah.
But this specific metaphor and what it's driving at, because it's not just, hey, we're playing songs because we're sad. It's, we're playing a song that invokes memories of when you were younger and not sad, which is super relatable. Like, you're having a bad time, you put on the feel good music, the comfort music that, like, makes you feel less sad,
especially if they're a journey band playing arena rock songs from the 80s.
Yeah, it's like, I've heard plenty of I'm playing music now because I'm actively sad, not I'm specifically playing songs that are gonna give you nostalgia of a time when you weren't sad. That's relatively unique.
Yeah, no, maybe you're right, that is kind of a unique take on it too. I honestly don't have too many notes about painkillers. I really didn't.
I have a couple notes on it. I have a question.
Okay.
How'd you feel about the tonight we're gonna dance over and over? I usually would be critical of that.
Well, I had no problems with it whatsoever.
Me neither. Good.
I thought it was really great. It was just kind of a groove to get into. And hey, you're forgetting about the pain.
And it feels like you're, like, actively on a dance floor dancing to it with those instruments.
It's true. I really like the interplay between the guitar and the piano. They complemented each other very nicely on Painkillers. And yeah, even though I didn't take too many notes on it, I think I was just caught up in it. It was really in my top five or better at this point in the album.
And then at, like, the 3 minute mark, when it comes out of that tonight we're gonna dance into the big, I highlighted the drums here because the drums do a big roll up into the, because they're begging for painkillers, and I was like, that was a nice highlight of the drums.
Be nice if this one got a music video. Don't make me email you again.
Up next, All the Way, which came out, like, in May of 2021.
Wow. This is one we could have done in the episode instead.
Yeah.
Practically.
And that's where I was kind of getting at, where it's like, I mean, this song's been out since May of 2021, and the album doesn't come out till October 14th of 2022.
Yeah.
Like, that's a long time for a single to be out without an album.
That's true.
And as they keep, like, every couple months trickling another one out to you, by the time October of 2022 gets around and you release an album, it's like, okay, but this is a song I've been listening to for over a year. Like, and it's just now on an album.
Right. I really liked, you talked about how some of these songs sound like they're Barry Manilow-esque, easy listening. I really liked All the Way because it was dissonant.
Yeah.
There were some blue notes in there, and it was, like, off a little bit, and it was really satisfying. Not dissonant in a bad way, dissonant in a very intentional, effective way.
Yeah, and they do some more vocal harmony stuff on this one.
Yes, a lot of vocal harmonies that I really liked. And another strong chorus. I think, honestly, All the Way, it's another, like, low-key song, a really strong mid late record kind of track that's a little less mass appeal-y than the rest, right? This isn't going to draw in the crowds of Devils in the Canyon or Overtime or whatever, but it's going to be a good, strong song.
Yeah, you know, like, if you like The Strike, you're going to like this song.
Right. A lot of good elements, a lot of really interesting musical things here. Like, when Quincy Jones picks them for his residency.
Who's that?
He picks them because of, sorry, when the guy that picks them for residencies at Swanky Dubai Clubs picks them for residencies, he's picking them because of songs like All the Way.
Yeah.
I mean, not really just because of that. Obviously, the other songs have their own strengths, but, like, this is something I would look at and say, oh, this is special. This is different. I didn't necessarily like his choice to go up to the higher note on All the Way to the Bottom.
So I was going to ask you about that, because I like how To the Bottom, they cut out everybody else and just go with him, but I don't know how I feel about him going up with it. Like, I thought it was a cool effect to cut them out and just have him, and I don't know what other direction I wanted him to go, but it doesn't always hit right. A couple of the times he does it, it hits okay, but a couple of them, they don't.
I think it's meant to be like an accent. I think he should do it once, maybe twice, to make that version of the phrase stand out.
Yeah, but doing it every time is too much. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, I think that's probably it. But I really like All the Way.
Coming in at track number 9, The Strangest Dream. with our first feature of the album.
First? Is it the only?
Technically, yes, it's the only.
Okay, I found my favorite feature.
If you don't count the Francisco Ojeda remix.
Well, no, he's not a feature. He's the guy. He's in the band.
Yeah, well, but it like features him specifically doing a remix. I don't know.
But it's also a remix, not a feature. He doesn't... He's already on the original song, and he's just remixing it, not adding new parts.
So yeah, this has the first and only feature featuring Alita Moses.
My least favorite feature.
Dang. Alita Moses, James, liked your feature the least.
The most? What? I said it was my favorite.
You said your least favorite.
No, but I started by saying it was my favorite.
Oh.
And then I said least favorite the next time.
Playing both sides, so no matter what, you come out on top.
That's right. I really like the hard stop out of All the Way into The Strangest Dream.
Yeah.
Solid transition. The Strangest Dream is kind of a weird song to me.
It is a weird song.
It's very arpeggiated. We get these quick little bursts of lyrics.
The song is simultaneously smooth and slower, but has that fast-paced drive to it with the bubba dubba 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 dubba.
Right.
It almost feels like when like you do that thing where you pretend you're running really fast, but you're just walking. Like, that's what I felt like with this song.
What?
You've never done that as like a joke thing with someone. It's like, hurry up. And so you start moving your arms really fast, like you're running, but you're not actually going any faster. You've never done that?
No.
Really? Oh, okay. That's what it felt like, though, for me. Like, that line, that dubba 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 dubba, feels like its arms are pumping really fast, but then the lyrics are just taking their sweet little time, gliding across the floor. Moonwalking.
Yeah, well, see, you say moonwalking. This is another song that I hear a lot of.
Walk the Moon.
Like Michael Jackson era pop influence.
Oh, okay.
Oh, and Walk the Moon too. You're right. But I was thinking actual moonwalking Michael Jackson.
I thought that's where you were going with that.
No. Like the pluck of the guitar just kind of takes me back to some of the stuff we talked about on Thriller.
Sure.
PYT level. Tenderoni. Strangest Dream is okay. I wasn't expecting a duet. It kind of caught me off guard. I did not expect another voice on the album. She does great.
You didn't notice that there was a feature on this when you hit play?
I kind of just was letting the album run. So no.
Fair enough. I've done that.
I know. It's kind of fun, right? Just to always be on a journey. You never know what's coming next. And also on Spotify, I mean, she's not listed in the title. She's just one of the artists attached to the song.
Oh, yeah. So it's easy to miss. True. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, even if you'd miss her, the world keeps turning.
True. The world keeps turning. I found it hard to have original notes that were uniquely about The World Keeps Turning. I think a lot of the things I would have said about it, I've said on one or more of the previous tracks.
I run into that sometimes.
That's not bad.
I think if anything, it's bad in the sense that it's like, oh, it's hard to stand out as a song, right?
Yeah, I definitely hit that.
But like, it also is a good thing because it's like the cohesiveness of the album, right? If it sounds that cohesive.
That's true. And it doesn't get soupy. Mm-hmm. Like the All American Rejects were a little soupy. I think this one starts just barely to get there by the end, but I'm never lost in it. And The World Keeps Turning, I mean, it just started that way until that choir kind of part, right? I'll pray for rain when the clouds above your head have turned to gray.
Yeah.
That part was very different and very good.
Sure.
Snap me right back.
This song came out July 12th of 2019, so it was out a long time before.
2019?
Yeah.
Wow.
This is what the indie world seems to do, because a lot of the indie artists that I listen to do this, where, you know, they'll go multiple years between albums, but that keep releasing music that whole time. And then when the album drops, it's got two or three new songs and everything else is the stuff that's come out in between albums.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it, sometimes that helps recontextualize all your singles.
Sure.
Which we'll get to in a minute.
We got a pair of longer songs here. 4 minutes each. The Strangest Dream and The World Keeps Turning.
Well, I mean, a little bit. I can't even really say that because look at what I've done to you.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, also just look at what I've done in the rest of this album. But I feel like these were both milder songs because like the other ones, like, I mean, Overtime was 433, Nothing New, 449, Miles Ahead, 405,
right.
Looking for Love, 458. But those were such fast paced songs that like you didn't even notice it was going for that long sometimes. Whereas two in a row here hitting the 4 minute mark at that more subdued tempo, I do think you're like, wow, man, this was the only spot on the album that I was like, man, we've kind of been in this for 8 whole minutes. Like,
yeah. Well, it's the point in the album where we're kind of halfway through a pretty consistent taper in popularity and listening plays.
They definitely front-loaded the more popular ones.
So front-loaded, this album. Yes.
Which probably hurts it a little bit. I think you could have spread them out.
A smidge.
But they flow so well together.
They do.
1 through 7 is like a nonstop ride. Like I get through those first 7 so fast.
1 through 8. Throw All the Way in there. Go All the Way.
Yeah, I meant to. I'm sorry. I just mislooked at it.
I mislooked?
Yeah, I did. 1 through 8 just fly by, and it's very well paced. I really enjoy the order. I guess maybe the problem is just they didn't have anything else to go with it.
I don't know. I think it's actually maybe a good thing that the world keeps turning is, for lack of a better word, kind of a more vanilla track.
Mm-hmm.
Because Through the Silence is not.
Yeah. I just don't like that they put two vanilla 4-minute long tracks next to one another. That was the first hiccup in the nonstop all gas rides that we roller coaster we'd been on, you know, of ups and downs.
Mm-hmm. You're right. It's an 8-minute chunk.
It's like when, like, you know, you're on a roller coaster that has to stop and re-chug you up a hill instead of it being one continuous smooth ride all the way through once you go over the first one.
Yes. Strangest Dream in the World Keeps Turning are re-chugs.
What do you think of Through the Silence, though?
Through the Silence confounds me and my sense of time signature.
Yeah?
The first time I listened to it, I was trying to catch it, to pick up with the time.
First time? You listened to it more than once?
I did have to listen to this one more than once.
Wow.
I only listened to it once last night.
Wow.
So that's still true.
Breaking the rules.
I really liked it, and I was trying to figure this one out. I approached this one with a very different understanding of what the time signature was going to be, based on the rest of this album being, like, straight fours. This one's what? 6/4? Like, it's hard to count this one.
It is hard to count.
And figure out where the melody's gonna land, and where the drums are landing. And that's what I love about it. Like, lyrically, yeah, it's fine. You know, you're listening, talking Through the Silence. Musically, Through the Silence is creative, and it's different, and it's difficult to write and to play. I think, of all the songs on this album,
this is the most complex.
Yeah, it's probably the song that shows off their pure musicianship the best so far. There's stuff in here that's not just like a production trick, or mixing, or a saxophone solo, or a soundscape, or whatever else. Like, this is just written and played really, really well.
Yeah.
It's got nowhere to hide, and I like it.
I like it too.
Except I still can't figure out the time signature and how to count it.
Yeah, I think you pretty summed it up pretty well. What do you think of the little fake out ending at like the 250 mark?
I like a good fake out ending.
It really like just bleeds off. You're like, oh, that's the song. And then they ramp back up for another minute.
Yeah, which is fine with me. I'm still, you know, just kind of grooving with it, trying to figure it out. It's a little mystery, and I like it.
Well, that brings us to our final track of the album,
mm-hmm.
In This Time Apart.
Yes, In This Time Apart. I really like the vibes of In This Time Apart as a closing track. It's got closing track energy.
It does.
I also really like the concept. I've been lost in this time apart, right? The whole album is called The Lost Years.
The Lost Years, right? Yeah.
So this track 12 here, this is when it all started to gel.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, shoot, this song makes me want a concept king.
Ooh.
I feel like this could be arranged into a concept album really easily. And I think the only reason it might not quite work is overtime, actually. But the rest of this album has a really interesting progression.
Hit me with it.
Well, we've got this guy. I mean, in theory, overtime is the beginning, right? If you do start with overtime, I guess he's infatuated with this person.
And he's working overtime to earn her love and all that.
And he's trying to, hard to impress her and to have money and to just better himself for her,
mm-hmm.
right? This person that he's infatuated with. Then he sees her and he knows that she's trouble with nothing new. He goes chasing after her and miles ahead. He catches her. They live a wild and free life together as devils in the canyon. And then they kind of start to realize that they have these fundamental incompatibilities on Take Me As I Am. In Looking for Love, we find out that she's too free-spirited. He's trying to lock her down and it's not working. She disappears off into the night. And then Painkillers is another little bit of like a perspective shift, right? He's trying to numb his own pain and he's saying, oh, maybe we should play shows to forget, right? Maybe we should go be painkillers for other people and remember the good times and get our minds off of things and stuff. All the Way is also a little ambiguous, but, you know, All the Way to the Bottom kind of follows him on this downward spiral. Like, my world has come apart and I'm scared, they sing in the song. You led me to the gates of heaven, but I couldn't get in. Our lyrics from All the Way. And that's kind of where he feels at this point. He's still dreaming about her. Maybe the strangest dream is some kind of resurgence where they try and reconnect and things go awry. You know, things are happening that he knows shouldn't happen. But, of course, the world keeps on turning. He keeps growing, starts to move on. He ends up left alone in the silence, thinking about all the old times. And In This Time Apart is a reflection on all those lost years since then, the time in between. And I thought that that made the entire album art feel a lot cooler, as the concept of the lost years is like this time we've lost in this relationship that's now worthless, you know, retrospectively. Like, he's running to escape the past, and the memory of this relationship is like the black hole that's just keeping pieces of him and pulling him back even as he's trying to outrun it and get away. Like, the lost years of that relationship are what's pulling him in.
Yeah, and I think it especially works well when you think about how time dilation works with a black hole, right?
Okay, well, that's a little niche, but yeah, go on.
Well, no, just, it's, you know, that's like one of the big defining features of a black hole, especially in any sort of like sci-fi movie, is the concept of time dilation, how the closer you get to its mass, the more time slows down for you and, you know, speeds up for everything else, not at the mass. And so you lose a lot of years. The idea of the lost years being like he's trying to run to escape this time-sucking relationship, as you kind of described it. And if he does manage to get out of there, think of all the lost years that he's missed as he's been deep down in this relationship.
Yeah, I just thought it was a really interesting capstone on... And that's why, I mean, yeah, they put out all these singles over the span of 3-4 years. Like, these songs are all old, but I think putting them into a framework like this really recontextualizes them.
Sure.
And kind of shifts, builds this whole narrative around everything that they've said. And the giant, like, whammy at the end of it is, I learned that I need you in this time apart.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lesson at the end. Every good story needs a moral. And I think The Lost Years as an album kind of gives us one at the end of this time apart.
I do. I think it's a good ending.
Yeah. Last track energy for sure.
But that brings us, well, do we want a final spin now or do we want to do our live listen of their newest song?
Let's listen to the song first.
That's kind of what I feel.
Also, for the record, I don't know if we're talking about Frank Ojeda's remix of Nothing New.
Oh, I wasn't planning on it, but if you wanted to, if you had anything to say, go for it.
Oh, I thought about it. I listened to it. Quick thoughts. Chris Crabb got a little chipmunked. Sped him up a little bit. I don't know if I love that, but the rest of the thing was very nice. I could really, really tell that Francisco Ojeda is a bassist.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear that bass. I mean, it's so emphasized. So I can really, really tell that he plays the bass.
Do you like it more or less than the original one?
You know, it's a fun remix and it's really technically good, but I definitely do like the original more, I think.
Sure.
But that's what remixes, you know, I think it's rare that people go for a remix over the original. And that's, I mean, for a handful of reasons. But if a remix is just intended to be a new interpretation of a song, you know, something different and fun, some different vision for the song, I think this one hits it.
Fair enough. So The Getaway literally came out today.
Wow.
Dating the recording of this, March 29th, 2024, this song came out. So we could not be any more on top of listening to this song.
That's exciting. It's like what we did with the band Camino all over again.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. You got to pull it up?
Yeah, it's ready to go.
On go. 3, 2, 1, go.
Good plan. Thanks for remembering.
Oh, a little plunky intro though.
Oh, the time. This has a lot more pep to it.
Yeah, it does.
It's like halftime from most of the songs on The Lost Years. I also noticed the cover art is returning to the car on the highway imagery.
The cover art is really cool.
It's a getaway car.
A spotlight shining down from the heavens. That's literally what's in the album art. It looks like a light shining down on the car from the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I like that run. I've been told that something's got to give. That was a good vocal run.
Yeah. Maybe that big square that the light from the heavens is coming from is the box that frames the cover art of Lost Years.
Oh, I really like this.
Well, to be honest, I do too, and it feels like it's a lot cleaner produced than even The Lost Years is.
I mean, I'm not surprised. 2024, I mean, think about 2 years have gone by. I mean, up to 5 years for some of the songs.
I know, I think the mix is really strong.
That was a really cool chorus. Again, this like time signature and with the vocal rhythms, they're playing with it in a very interesting way.
The dynamics are also a lot better.
Uh-huh.
The way that we built into the chorus and brought it back down was really effective into the second verse.
Yeah.
Good guitar fills too. Not too much, not too little.
I really like that pre-chorus a lot. I'm a big fan of this pre-chorus.
It's pretty strong. That rhythm on the drums was really good. Leading into the second chorus, they kind of did a little stop beat there that I liked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know I'm a sucker for syncopation. I don't like the end of the chorus.
You don't like it?
Just like the very last phrase.
I like the lyrics. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about the ending. I'll have to hear it again here. I like the lyric, and even though all is lost, I'm lost with you. That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Shotgun in my car for the getaway. That's just a good syncopation. You're right.
Yep.
So that one was fine. Ooh, there's the saxophone. I was wondering.
I knew it would get here.
I was like, man, there's been a surprising lack of saxophone.
A lack of sax?
Yes, go saxophone. Ooh, I really liked that a lot.
Yeah, I liked that song. That was a good one.
That was good. Big fan of The Getaway.
Gonna have to drop all my scores for the last years now.
Oh no!
I'm gonna have to go down a little bit.
No! No.
Just kidding, they're locked in. Let's do some final spin.
Let's say, do I go first now?
Since you're the one in charge, I don't know how we do this.
145 episodes and we still don't know what to do when I'm in charge.
Well, you know. So, you should start it off probably.
Okay.
Since you only give nines on your own picks, I mean, it's a little kind of a foregone conclusion.
For now, that may be changing.
Oh.
Someday soon.
Okay. So, not today?
No, not today.
I didn't think so.
Not this year, put it that way. But, you know, I have ideas.
Interesting.
So, yeah, this one's obviously getting a 9. Mm-hmm. What was really interesting is where it ended up.
Yeah, where would that be?
Yeah, so this one's getting 9 saxophone solos out of 10 for me.
Deserved. Yeah, there's probably about 9 saxophone solos on the album.
If not more. And it's going right above the band Camino, right below Bad Sons.
Stop, you're making another clump.
I am, and I don't mean to, but it's just where, you know what? No, I'm breaking up the clump. I mean, kinda. It's still kinda clumpy. I've changed my mind. I have changed my mind in the moment, having just really analyzed the album and listened to that new song. I think I like this better than Bad Sons and better than Red.
Whoa.
I'm putting it right below Toto.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 9 saxophone solos. Better than 9 double listens, less than 9 nines.
Less than 81? Wow.
I really liked Overtime when I brought it. I've been listening to this album since it came out. I was introduced to kind of the Strike, the Band Camino, and Bad Sons all around the same time in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the Strike is the one I find myself going back to the most out of the three of them.
That's surprising.
I think it's the instrumentals solos. I think
of the three, they're objectively the least like known.
I think so too. Although apparently not in China or Dubai, but
well, hey.
But I think it's the saxophone solos and some of the other instrumental stuff they do just really I'm a big fan of. Like I said, I'm a huge fan of Journey, right? And their Journey Light.
Journey Junior.
Journey Junior, JJ. Little JJs. Yeah, my top three.
They're not very far from Journey Senior on your list either. Probably.
No, I mean,
7-8 albums separate them.
Yeah. In album order, my top three. Overtime.
Of course. Basic.
What? Or maybe I should be smart. No, I'm not putting Overtime in my top three. Changed my mind. Because I already brought them for my singles episode.
Oh, wow. Oh.
We already know I really like it. So I'm gonna skip it because everybody already knows I really like it.
Yeah, that's true.
We're going to go Nothing New, Devils in the Canyon,
ooh.
Painkillers.
How can you be that big of a fan? You haven't even seen the music video.
And Carmel mentioned to In This Time Apart.
Really? Okay.
Being reserved, you know, I have a tendency to want to like take the whole album when I bring something, but I'm trying to be reserved. So I'm just going to take my normal Connor top three.
Sure. And I mean, you did untake Overtime. It's so, like, we kind of know where you stand on that. So
yeah.
So you kind of cheesed one already.
And I'm not going to tell you my playlist pick till I hear your thoughts.
Okay. I had a hard time with top threes on this one, too. I was also considering Overtime, but I think like you, I'm going to not take it because I already talked about Overtime. So I won't take it for top three. I think my opinion on this has changed since I listened to the album first and took these notes.
Oh.
I considered Through the Silence for its weird time changes and tempo.
Mm.
I really liked it. I think at best it can maybe get a mention. But what was your top three again?
I'm not telling you.
You took Nothing New, Devils in the Canyon, Painkillers, even though you haven't seen the music video and the last track.
See, you didn't need me to tell you.
No. I also, I'll Jamesable mention slash like half kind of take Nothing New.
Okay.
And Miles Ahead is going to be one of my picks. I'm tied. Those two are dead heat, even tie for me.
Yeah.
Can't choose one. They are exactly, I don't want both, but I want either. And I don't want to lose one in my top threes.
Sounds like you want them both then.
So I don't know what to do about that.
You could take an extra one, and the penalty would just be that gives me an extra one.
What if I take an extra one, and then it still subtracts from you next week?
No.
That'll work. I'll take, yeah, I'll just claim them both. I thought about Devils in the Canyon.
You're not going to take it? Really?
But it kind of just ended up being eh for me. No, it wasn't my favorite. Looking for Love, also as one of the non-grower tracks, one of the ones that stood out right away, was notable. But I think my other top three slots are going to go officially to Painkillers, because the mixtaper had a fun time making up a music video for that song. And All the Way.
All the Way to the Bottom. Yeah, I mean, I could find reason to take pretty much almost every song on this album for one reason or another. So I can't be angry at any of your picks.
Good, I'm glad. Now, how do you think this is going to score? Your goal is to make Year of Healing top 100.
I'm not going to hit top 100. I already determined that wasn't going to happen.
Really?
Yeah.
What makes you think that?
I went into it kind of feeling this was like a top 200 kind of album for you. Just in what I knew about your listening preferences. And then hearing some of your thoughts on it, like, you weren't really negative or disliking much of anything. You had a couple small nitpicky changes to some of the songs, but you weren't like overly the top, this is an outstanding album, like unique album. You tend to go for something that sounds musically distinct and unique and add something to the music world that you're not necessarily used to hearing. Whereas one of the comments you even made about this was that several of these tracks weren't anything you hadn't heard other ways by other artists. So I'm anticipating this one is going to score well technically, but not get anywhere close to breaking the top 100 for you for that reason.
Okay. Well, since it's your birthday, I will tell you that you are 100% pretty close. Yeah, it's good. You're right. But my notes exactly were that the problem is, like, I've kind of heard it before.
Yeah.
It's Walk the Moon, it's Valley, it's a little bit Coin, a little bit Bad Sons. It just has a lot of very eminent points of comparison. And so I was trying to score this album, like, it's a very familiar indie pop kind of sound. So I'm looking at, like, what does The Strike do differently? The loose concept of the lost years helps, but unfortunately on one listen, I didn't really grab that until the closing track. The horns throughout the album really help. The saxophone is unique and different. Like, that's not something too many other bands are doing in this space. Chris Crabb as a vocalist helps. Like, he's got a great vocal. Overall, so the scores are fallen like this. Music, I think, gets an 85. There are a couple of ends of phrases, a couple of choruses, just things that don't quite do what I anticipated them doing that ended up falling a little bit flat. Not necessarily in the worst way. So many of these songs are going to be stuck in my head for ages, right? I'm going to be doing Nothing New and Overtime and Devils in the Canyon for a long time, whether they were my favorites or not, because they're just sticky songs. Lyrically, I'm giving it an 82. I don't know if I could remember too many lyrics on this album outside of, like, the title lyrics. They're good. It's like we talked about. This is an instrumental-driven album that the music keeps up with.
Yep.
And so I'm giving the instruments and production an 89.
Really? That was the one score I thought, with the saxophones and some of the other drum stuff and stuff, that was the one category I thought was going to crack into the 90s.
Well, it almost does.
Yeah, but it didn't. And that's significant for you. 90s, like, a very strong threshold for you. Like, if it cracks into the 90s, that's meaningful. The difference between an 89 and a 90 for you is its own canyon.
Maybe.
So I really thought the instruments was the one category that would crack a 90.
Well, but think about this too. Well, compare what we just listened to, I mean, on the Lost Years, with the song we just live did, The Getaway. And think about how much the production changed even then to be a lot cleaner and fresher. I think they've got...
Well, yeah, you're right. It's instruments and production. So the production is what's holding it down. I get that.
In a lot of ways. Well, I think they've got a lot of stuff down really well. And I just think on the Lost Years, I mean, it's clear they've got growth that's happened between then and now. I think if I listened to an album that sounded like The Getaway sounded, this would be above a 90 by a couple points, maybe. So it's just, you know, it's just one of those things. Overall vibe, 87. I did like this album. It's a feel-good, good-time album. Even though, lyrically, I guess it's not a feel-good, good-time album if it's all about trying to chase after someone you're not compatible with, falling in and out of love, and constantly reminiscing about the endlessness of time.
I'm not even sure I'm going to crack 200 based on those scores.
Well,
I was banking on instruments and production cracking 90 and vibe being like an 88, 89, but it was down to like an 86, so I don't think I'm going to crack 200.
Well, its overall score is an 85.9. That puts it I was surprised to see at number 267.
267. Oh,
it's exactly 1/10 of a point below your last pick, Drive by Alan Jackson.
Yeah,
they're smooching there in my rankings. So you're consistent. You know, when you're doing the thing of like the darts on the dartboard, and one is accuracy and one is precision.
Yeah,
you're consistent and you're precise. You've hit the same mark twice.
Yeah, well, that mark is not anywhere near the bullseye.
Well, the year of healing marches on.
I feel like I'm going to come out of the year of healing not healed.
It was a good album. I was really excited for this episode. I'm so glad to have the context for Overtime and to like put it more in an album space. You know, I'm excited to have these songs on the playlists that I listen to all the time. It's great. As for our episodes that we've done, obviously it's just below Alan Jackson, but it ranks above Master Puppets. As for your picks, the order is Phantom of the Opera, Frontiers by Journey, Crazy Love by Michael Bublé, The Lost Years.
I wasn't even there for Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, you're right. The mixtaper.
The mixtaper's doing better than I am.
It's true. You're right.
Thanks for that reminder on my birthday.
Sorry. Well, after The Lost Years, it's Even Now, then Plastic Hearts, then Ray Stevens' Dr. Demento. That's how the chips fall. What do you think of her playlist picks?
I feel like as the birthday boy, I should get to go second. I already think I know what you're picking.
Oh, do you?
If I had to guess, you're picking Painkillers.
Oh, hadn't even considered it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, what's your pick? Are you taking Overtime? You were thinking Nothing New or Miles Ahead, but looking for love? I mean, what are you thinking?
My take is going to be either Nothing New or All the Way.
Ooh.
Normally, I'd hinge it on what you picked.
Well, I wasn't picking either of those, so your choice would not have been easier.
No. Well, it would have been easier because I could compare it and pick a complimentary flavor.
I would prefer you took Nothing New because that makes my choice a little easier.
Okay. Well, you know, since it's your birthday, I'll take All the Way. I'm just kidding. That's a joke. I'll go with Nothing New.
So I have an interesting proposal here.
Okay.
If I had to pick one, it would probably be Overtime, but that sounds a lot like Nothing New. They're very similar, right?
Well, that's why I was going to...
But since you're taking Nothing New, I have an interesting proposal for you.
Nothing New twice?
That'd be Nothing New. I really, really enjoyed The Getaway.
Oh.
And I think it'd be really cool to have a song that was just released about a little under a month ago by the time this comes out on the podcast playlist, favorite songs list. I think that'd be cool. And I think it's very different from Nothing New in terms of sound.
You liked it that much to instantly like it better than everything off this?
I liked it a lot off of one listen. Well, I've listened to everything else, and I just also think it'd be funny to have Overtime be on the podcast twice and still not get picked.
Even though it was really, the reason it didn't get picked from the singles episode is because we made our
picks off limits.
Personal selections off limits. Because otherwise we would have just taken our own.
Yeah. I don't know. What are your thoughts? I thought it was a really cool song.
It's your birthday. It's fine. Sure.
I think I want to take The Getaway. It was very cool.
Okay.
I mean, before we even picked this album, when I was struggling to pick which album I wanted to do, because I really liked their album, Faint of Heart, as well, and I saw that a song was going to be coming out, I was like, what if this is a full album drop? We could do their brand new album. And then it wasn't. Like, I was gearing up to do... I was very excited by this drop happening around this time. And I thought it was... I really liked that you delayed the podcast, or the mixtaper delayed the podcast. Thanks to you, you know? You and him were in cahoots to delay the podcast to the point that we were able to do this song.
No, you're right. That's true. So, you're welcome.
Yeah, we'll take The Getaway.
Awesome. So, you are down to 11 episodes left to heal, to accomplish your goals.
Yeah, I think I'll have one more pick in there somewhere towards the end of the year, hopefully as a chance, maybe. I'd like one more chance to heal us before the end of the year.
We'll see how it all shakes out.
I have the perfect pick in mind.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got one last idea for how we can heal this year. And if that doesn't heal us, I don't know what will. So,
okay.
Stay tuned for that.
Well, we'll see in a few weeks. But now it's your turn to do the outro.
Oh my gosh, it is, and I haven't practiced. Hey, you. Yeah, you.
Good start.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, make sure you check out more of our episodes available right where you're listening to this right now. You can listen to it there. All of our episodes are there, I promise. But if you don't want to listen to it where you're currently listening to it, you could listen to it on our website, www.spinitpod.com. But wait, there's more. We got extended B-side cuts of some of our favorite episodes that just we couldn't figure out what to cut, so we made them extra long. We got blooper reels of mainly me flubbing words in most of our episodes, and some bonus content like a Hot Chicken Takeover where I cry.
That's true.
All that available at www.spinapod.com.
What about the socials?
Oh, I'm getting there. The website was just the main event. Now for the dessert. All right, we got socials.
Whoa.
Our Instagram, at SpinItPodOfficial, or on X, formerly known as Twitter, at SpinItPod.
Nice.
Tell a friend named Steve about the podcast. And then tune in next week, where James will be back in control, and I'll be back just goofing off like usual. And you can hear James say funny things like this.
I promise I didn't forget your birthday a second time.
And more. But, you know, until then, the only other thing I got for you is to keep spinning. Did I do it? Did I forget anything? Did I nail it all?
I think you got it. Did you open your birthday present yet?
Did you send me a birthday present?
Well, I assume you got at least one.
No.
Oh. Well, it's on the way.
Unfortunately, we're recording ahead of time, so my birthday hasn't actually happened. Which is probably why you almost forgot it again, and the mixtaper had to remind you, because you almost went half the episode without mentioning it was my birthday.
So did you.
That was a test. I knew the whole time. That was just to see if you were going to forget again.
Mm-hmm. And hey, happy birthday, Duke Ellington.
He's my nemesis.